Go2 Health, your guide to fitness and well-being for 2018 with Frances Cook.
Hi, I'm Frances Cook. Welcome to the show. It doesn't take a genius to realise our current approach to drug use is flawed. Synthetic cannabis is a growing problem, with users often left a drooling mess and rolling the dice that homemade concoctions may actually kill them. Meth use also doesn't seem to be going anywhere fast, with the expensive habit often sucking addicts into criminal activity in order to keep the drugs coming. Meanwhile, the rest of us are sitting around debating whether people who are dying of cancer can use medical marijuana as pain relief. The new government is set to introduce medicinal cannabis legislation for those with terminal illness or chronic pain as part of their 100-day plan. But even if there's action on that point, the rest of our drug laws still look topsy-turvy. Emotion and moral judgment are loaded into the debate rather than a cold, hard look at what works for the most people. It's hard not to look at Portugal for answers after they decriminalised all drugs in 2001. That doesn't mean drugs are legal, it's just not a crime. And if you get caught using, you get a medical referral instead of jail time. What's happened in the 16 years since? A sharp drop in drug-related harm, that's what. A drop in overdoses, HIV infections, drops in drug-related crime. The only increase was in the numbers of people getting medical help for drug addiction, which shot up 60% between 1998 and 2011. So, could that ever work for us?
Go2 Health, your guide to fitness and well-being for 2018 with Frances Cook.
I'm joined now by Ross Bell, Executive Director of the Drug Foundation. So there's this growing conversation at the moment around drug use and how we handle people using illegal drugs. And particularly for New Zealand, a lot of that seems to start at least with the conversation around medicinal marijuana and where that starts and ends. So let's start there. What is medicinal marijuana and how would it change our health system if we brought it in?
Oh, this is all complicated. You're right, you know, medical cannabis is the low-hanging fruit of any kind of drug law reform. But what do we mean by that? A doctor would say medical cannabis is a pharmaceutical product that I can write a prescription out for my patient and I know how it's going to interact with other medication and how it's going to benefit their specific illness. At a different end, you've got people who are saying, look, I want the right to grow my own medicine in my backyard because this helps me for all of these reasons. And I think both positions are legitimate. We certainly have come across medical cannabis patients who absolutely get alleviation, pain alleviation, benefit from their cannabis, but doctors who have gone through 6 years of medicine and want to do the right thing. And then, so for a government, when they're talking about let's legalize cannabis for medical purposes, what does that mean? Is it the prescription, something in a packet that the doctor can write a script for, or is it something different than that?
Interesting. And it's interesting that you mentioned someone growing in their backyard, because what strikes me is the problem around vetting products, possibly. And we've seen the situation in Colorado where obviously that's different. And I want to be very clear about that from the get-go, because what they've done is legalize cannabis for recreational use. So very different situation. They have edibles, things like the marijuana gummy bears. And one of the problems is it's very unreliable how strong each batch is. So when it comes down to medical products, are there issues like that?
Well, there are. And this is why we've always been really clear that there needs to be separation between adult or recreational use from medical use. Because, yes, if you're going to argue that this plant that has 400 compounds in it that might have some medical benefit, if you're going to argue that, then you have to be willing to accept that the medical profession want to know how those 300 compounds might interact with other medication, or how they're going to benefit a patient with multiple sclerosis versus a patient with cancer pain versus a patient with HIV, et cetera, et cetera. And so the need for a doctor or even the patient themselves to know that ratio of compounds, you know, that much CBD or THC benefits me in this way. You can't simply say, well, it's a free-for-all, grow your own, so we do need to, you know, we do need a system where doctors and patients have real clarity about what they're getting prescribed and how it's going to benefit them. And also, you know, to be honest, the risks around some of that.
Mm. So would one of the benefits in your mind be bringing a bit of rigor to the system and knowing what you're getting?
Well, that would certainly be one of the key benefits from the medical side of thing. But the other benefit to extract medical cannabis out of the black market is to put some safety around the patients, people who right now are choosing to break the law. And so I want a regime in place that protects them, that means that they don't have to go to the criminal black market for their medicine, that means they're not going to get arrested and get a criminal conviction, that means that the people who might be growing for them aren't going to be in that situation as well. And then also we deliver them a medicine that does benefit them. And so this is the devil's in the detail. When a government's, you know, campaigns, you know, the first 100 days we're going to legalise medical cannabis, I still don't know what they mean by that.
Mm. Okay, and one of the other issues that strikes me, at least, is that there is a stigma in some corners of society, particularly those who believe it's an excuse to get high. Do you think this would maybe cause ethical problems for doctors and nurses?
Oh, I think doctors and nurses already have those ethical problems with other pharmaceutical products anyway. And I think yes, a few years ago there was the fear, and that fear was expressed by the previous government, that somehow medical cannabis was a backdoor, you know, way to legalising cannabis. I think we've moved on from that. I think everyone now knows a legitimate medical cannabis patient who is in pain who would benefit from that. Certainly there's been enough high-profile cases to tell those stories. And, you know, we've done public polling on this for the last couple of years, and support across the board for medical cannabis is about 85%.
Wow.
So yeah, there's no public downside here. If you look at some Ministry of Health data, for example, the biggest users of medical cannabis are older people. You know, so you've got a cohort of people who are in pain, probably really unsatisfied with the kind of medication they're getting from their doctor, and they, you know, someone slips them a joint or a cookie, and they get real benefit from that, and they talk to each other, and so I think the public's really comfortable with this issue now. I don't think that backdoor fear is there anymore, but the complication still remains for government is what regime do you put in place to be able to benefit everybody who needs to benefit?
Well, let's have a little bit of a closer look at that backdoor. Should we stop with medicinal marijuana?
Well, we shouldn't. I'm kind of a policy wonk, and I prefer to put medical cannabis in that basket and recreational cannabis in another. But I know that life is not that clear cut for me. But no, we shouldn't stop at medical cannabis. The other reality is that we've got a failed drug law, and we've had it for over 40 years, and it hasn't done the thing that it was designed to do, which is to reduce drug harm. It's easy to argue that the law itself creates a whole lot of harm while at the same time not addressing the harm from the drug. So yes, our law has to change. Our law around cannabis has to change, and we think that there is enough to learn from different things that other countries are doing overseas. I think there's enough intelligence in New Zealand itself to design a law reform that we should be happy with. So yeah, I'm quite impatient around law reform. We pushed the previous government to engage on this, and they weren't willing to. Everything they did was in sort of piecemeal around the fringes stuff. So we're really hoping that with this new government, with some of the commitments they've made, that, you know, New Zealand is going to launch itself into designing a modern drug law.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because, I mean, there's stats around drug use, but also you only have to be someone like I walk down Cuba Street in Wellington, or you can walk down Queen Street in Auckland, and you only need to have a pair of eyes in your head to see that drug use is a problem in our country. And, you know, synthetic cannabis, pee, those have hit the headlines for the huge harms they do. At the moment, those issues are dealt with under the criminal system. It's the police who are called. And if people are using enough, they'll go to jail. Should we follow Portugal's lead and turn this into a health issue?
Oh, without a doubt. Portugal is a fantastic model. We used to call it an experiment, but it's been going for since 2001, so it's, you know, it's locked and loaded. It's a fantastic model because they did say drugs is a health issue, which is what this current government is saying as well. And they put in a system, they put in law reform, and at the same time they put health, you know, they invested in health. So it wasn't just a law reform thing. You know, they changed the law, they decriminalised all drugs, they opened up real good pathways where people could get referred very quickly in, to, you know, to get in front of people who might be able to help them. And at the same time, a whole lot of resources went into treatment. Now, you look at New Zealand, we're doing everything wrong. We've relied heavily on the law to fix the problem. It hasn't. I'm never going to deny that cannabis and other drugs causes problems. That's quite obvious, but the law isn't fixing that. And we've got waiting lists for treatment. We've got people who put up their hand for help who can't get it. So for me, you look at Portugal and think, yeah, bring it on. Let's have the law reform. Let's treat it as a health issue. Let's remove the harms from the law itself. Getting a criminal conviction is not a good thing. And at the same time, invest in drug education and prevention and treatment and rehabilitation. Let's not build new prisons. You know, let's eliminate treatment waiting lists. When we say that this is a health issue and when the government now agrees with us, then let's do something practical to put that in place. You know, let's not evict people who use methamphetamine from housing New Zealand houses. You know, there's really practical things we can do when we say that this is a health issue.
And Portugal's seen a really strong response, a huge decrease in the harms from drug use. Even associated things like HIV infections are down. Do you think we could import that wholesale here? Because every country is different. Do you think New Zealand could take that all on?
I think we could. You'd tinker around with some of how the systems would work. But, you know, the beauty of Portugal is that it puts to bed the lie that if you change your drug law, you're going to increase drug use. So the Portugal model saw drug use come down. It saw overdose deaths come down. It saw the prison population come down, HIV infections coming down, etc. And I think we could achieve the same aims. But I think we would design a slightly different system, similar but different. So at the moment, we already have police, for example, using what's called a pre-charge warning, which is you get a formal caution, which is essentially what happens in Portugal. So why can't we? You know, if we're doing it already, why don't we, you know, legalise that? Why don't we say to the police that all these different models you're trying, the pre-charge warnings and all the diversion schemes? Well, that's essentially what Portugal is. So let's write that into law and then do the magical part of Portugal, which is to stick a whole lot of money into treatment. And I tell you what, frontline cops would love that. You know, we're hearing from the police hierarchy right down to frontline police officers who are telling us and the media we can't arrest our way out of this problem. And they express real frustrations where they're picking up the same people over and over again, they're busting down the same doors, they're seeing the same families. All the police want to do is when they're confronted with that situation where it's so obvious that these people have a drug problem, the police just simply want to give them help. And at the moment, because we're not resourcing it properly, there's nowhere to refer people to.
Okay, so if people were to get those referrals, at the moment, could our health system cope? Because what strikes me is even suicidal people can't get help at the moment, never mind drug addicts.
Oh, so this brings, you know, 9 years, right, of the national government who denied the fact that there were real problems in the health system. And at the end, those problems were just so horribly highlighted by 606 suicides, by very long waiting lists for people wanting mental health care and addictions care. Your question was, can the health system cope? Well, no, it can't, because it's not now. And so we have to invest in this. And so it becomes a question of where is the government willing to put its money? The previous government was willing to put $1.6 billion into a prison. Well, you know, there's my treatment budget right there, right? You know, I'd happily do with additional $300 million for drug treatment every year. Let's make sure this new government makes the right policy and funding choices.
It will certainly be interesting to see where this goes. Okay, thank you so much. That's Ross Bell from the Drug Foundation. Lots of food for thought in this episode, so if you want to ask me a question about it or there's something different you'd like me to look into for a future episode, come and talk to me about it either way. I'm on Facebook at Frances Cook Journalist and Twitter at Frances Cook. Don't forget to subscribe to the Go to Health podcast. You're also very welcome to leave me a 5-star review, just saying. We're on Apple Podcasts and iHeartRadio. And until next time, have a great day.
Go to Health, your guide to fitness and well-being for 2018 with Frances Cook.